Listener note, this episode might be a little scary for younger listeners, especially right at the end. Listener discretion is advised. This is Spooky Ann Arbor Stories. I'm Rich Reddy. Martha Crawford lived somewhere in Canada with a young son named Joseph and a husband who doesn't get a name in this story because he dies right now. The widow Crawford decides to visit her sister, Anne Mulholland, in Michigan. Anne is a pleasant person living in a pleasant place, and the trip is a nice opportunity for Martha and young Joseph to leave some of their sadness behind. It's 1835. They travel to the village of Dixboro. Time for a quick history lesson. Back up to 1824, 11 years before Martha and Joseph make their trip, Captain John Dix of Boston, Massachusetts, purchases 469 acres of land in Ypsilanti Township for $1.25 an acre, the same amount Ann Arbor founders John Allen and Elisha Rumsey paid for their 640-acre tract of land that same year. Allen and Rumsey's land has the Huron River. Dix is closer to Detroit. On part of his land, Dix founds the town of Dixboro. At 28, Captain Dix has already led an amazing life. Off to sea at age 16, he made his mark in the War of 1812, made his fortune after the war, even survived a terrible shipwreck somewhere in between. Dix built his house in 1824, moved in that same year, sketched a plan for the town, and formally platted it in 1826, creating 64 lots on 25 acres, including a public square for a church and school. The first schoolhouse was built sometime between 1828 and the early 1830s, and by 1835, when Martha and her son arrive, Dixboro has two taverns, two general stores, mills, everything a growing town needs. Dix didn't stick around long. There are conflicting reasons as to why he sold his land to James P. Clements in 1833, took his family and settled in Texas. The town felt his absence. It survived, but couldn't keep up with the Ann Arbors and Ypsilantis around it. But in 1835, when recently widowed Martha Crawford and her son paid a visit, it was a popular stop between Detroit and Ann Arbor, and a town about to get a ghost story. Martha stepped out of the carriage and hugged her sister, who she hadn't seen in some time. She shook hands with her brother-in-law, James Mulholland, and was introduced to James's brother, John. Single, young, handsome in a Dixboro population 50 kind of way. Martha and John also shook hands. Soon, they do a lot more. Hitting it off immediately. Jumping straight to the courting. Plans for a small wedding were hastily drawn up. It all seemed wonderfully fated. Except for one thing. Martha's sister, Anne, knew a secret. Why she didn't tell Martha sooner is beyond me. Maybe tip her off before Martha and John's first date. Just a teensy-weensy heads up. But Anne waited. Waited until Martha was deciding between wedding cake or cupcake tower when she whispered something so terrible in Martha's ear that she broke off the engagement immediately. Began packing her bags for Canada. There was a knock at the door. It was Anne's husband, James, come a-calling. But not in a nice, can I help you with your bags, or hail you a horse and buggy kind of way. No. He was menacing. He threatened her. If she ever fled for Canada, her and her son would never cross the border alive. Martha was terrified. Her sister helpless, likely living her own secret nightmare. Martha unpacked. The wedding was back on. Soon, Martha Crawford became Martha Mulholland. And that terrible secret was... Don't worry, it's coming. Anne fell ill and wasted away shortly after her sister's nuptials. She died not long after the rice hit the ground. Martha's own husband, John, died less than 5 years into the marriage, lowered into the ground in 1840. Twice widowed, Martha and her widowed brother-in-law, James, were left to divvy up the Mulholland family estate. It was a contentious fight. Martha didn't much like James, and she knew the terrible secret the brothers harbored. The secret which was, not yet. Then Martha took ill as well, wasting away as her sister had. In her diminished state, James went to court to declare her incompetent and insane, attempting to wrest control of his dead brother's estate. In 1845, Martha traveled to Ann Arbor and finally revealed her secret. She whispered it to a University of Michigan physician named Dr. Sam Denton, but only after he agreed to bleed her to death after she confessed. Denton had no intention of assisting this woman's suicide. He faked a broken lancet and turned her away. Hysterical, Martha returned to Dixboro, where she died shortly thereafter. Only James Mulholland and Martha's now 15-year-old son Joseph remained. Dear listener, you clearly suspect foul play, but the residents of Dixboro assumed Martha passed from the same illness that took her sister 10 years earlier. It was 1845. People died from stubbing their toes. That fall, Isaac Van Wart and his family settled in Dixboro, renting Martha's home from her son, who was probably smart enough to get away from James Mulholland. After spending only a few nights in Dixboro, Van Wart had a strange and terrible encounter with a ghost. While walking through the yard at dusk, Van Wart saw a light inside the house. Spooky quote. "I put my hand on the windowsill and looked in. I saw a woman with a candlestick in her hand. She held it in her left hand. She wore a loose gown, had a white cloth around her head, her right hand clasped in her clothes near the waist. She was bent forward, her eyes large and much sunken, very pale indeed. She moved slowly across the floor until she entered the bedroom and the door closed. I then went up and opened the bedroom door, and all was dark. I stepped forward and lighted a candle, but saw no one, nor heard any noise. Except just before I opened the bedroom door, I thought I heard one of the bureau drawers open and shut." End spooky quote. He told a few townspeople what he saw, and that's when he learned of the story of poor Martha. Van Wart saw the spirit again, right before Halloween. He was awakened by a noise at 1 a.m. He opened the bedroom door and saw a light in the house, but no candle. Standing 5 feet away was the same woman in white. "Don't touch me," the spirit said, and Van Wart stepped back. "He has got it. He robbed me little by little until they killed me. They killed me. Now he has got it all." Van Wart asked, "Who? Who killed you? Who has it all?" The spirit replied, "James. James has got it at last." Then everything went dark. And the secret you've been dying to know was, through the fall, the ghost of Martha Mulholland appeared to Van Wart 9 times in all. Each time it gave more and more detail about its fate. The ghost implicating her husband, James, members of his family, and a local doctor in her murder. The ghost also mercifully, finally, told the secret it had shared only once before. Martha's ghost implicated this same cabal in several other murders, telling Van Wart that the bodies of these poor souls were dumped in nearby Frayne Lake and a town well. Overcome by the experience and confident in his sanity, Van Wart traveled to Ann Arbor and signed a sworn statement in front of the Justice of the Peace, describing each encounter in great detail. Dixboro was split on whether or not to believe this newcomer's tale. But Martha's body was exhumed. The coroner investigated and ruled that she had indeed been poisoned. Authorities searched the lake and the well for the other alleged victims, but failed to turn up further traces of murderous misdeeds. The police found no evidence linking James Mulholland, his family, or the crooked town doctor in any murders, but that didn't stop the whole lot of them from skipping town. Every last one of the suspected killers fled Dixboro and never came back. The Van Warts eventually moved out. The haunted house switched hands a few times, and sometime in the 1860s or 1870s, the house burned down under suspicious circumstances. There's been no report of the ghost of the widow Mulholland since. But Dixboro may still have a ghost. Bonus ghost story, lucky you. Perhaps the first victim of the poison posse may still haunt Dixboro to this day. A traveling tin peddler spent the night at a tavern on Cherry Road, right across the street from the Dixboro General Store. He tied up his horse and cart outside, got something to eat, went to bed. In the morning, the salesman was nowhere to be found, his horse and cart exactly where he'd left them the day before. No one ever saw or heard from him again. Rumor has it, one of the Mulholland brothers murdered the peddler and dumped his body down a well, though no corpse was found and the well was filled in not long after the alleged crime. Why they did it? Who knows. How they did it? Ditto. But a ghost story emerged from the deed. Stand on the grass across from the Dixboro General Store on Cherry and Plymouth. Maybe grab a handful of Mary Janes before you go. Dixboro General Store, open Monday through Saturday, 10 to 6, and Sundays, 11 to 5. Wait until it gets dark. Look for the moon. On quiet nights like these, close your eyes. Rein your neck. Listen closely. They say on nights like this, if you're lucky, you can still hear the tinkle of the murdered tin peddler's bell as it sways on his long-forgotten cart. Boo! Ann Arbor Stories is presented by Spooky Stories Incorporated in partnership with the Ann Arbor District Library. This episode was written and read by me, Rich Reddy, with recording and sound production by Brian Peters. Thanks, as always, to the Ann Arbor District Library and their super spooky archive staff who continue to help us locate and research these spooky stories. Please follow us on Twitter at Ann Arbor Stories or drop us a line at annarborstories@gmail.com. We'd love to hear what you thought of this episode, or if you have any ideas for an episode you'd like us to research. Thanks for listening.